Mini episode 951 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 951. I'm FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, here to introduce the latest incarnation of our series, recounting our greatest guest moments, this one from Mini Episodes 851 to 950. Today we take a look back at conversations with a number of American originals during that time frame. Chidi Ahanotu, Curtis Armstrong, John Bastow, William Cohen, Michael Harmon, and Jack Myers. The breadth of our conversations with these guests continues to reinforce the credo of the FDH Lounge as the show where nothing is off topic. I know this is going to be a very difficult question, and if the answer is I don't know, then I respect that. But you alluded to brain damage and tests for it. I've heard that they are developing tests. It's still experimental, but where they could screen people for CTE while they're still alive. If this happens in your lifetime, or the next 10 or 20 years or whatever, would you want to know as a player, as a former player, would you want to know this, or would you just rather just go through it and kind of take your chances? Because it would be a terrible burden to know that you have CTE. So where do you come out on that if you do know?
All of us already believe that we do have CTE.
Okay.
I mean, Dave Dewison was a friend of mine.
Okay.
Junior Seau was my teammate.
Wow.
I mean, all of us are walking around thinking, well, we must have it too. Okay, so if there was a way to find out for sure, I'd rather know for sure.
Okay.
I'm already betting I have it, you know. I mean, every brain that they've opened up posthumously, they had it. And not even a little bit, a lot of it. So, yeah, I think every player would want to take that test to find out if they have CT so they can at least know.
Yeah.
There's things you can do when you know that you have something. You know, the danger is when you don't know you have something and you run and walk around, you know, and you don't know what consent you are.
Yeah. Wow.
So you've got to know. You'd rather know. And so you can do certain things. You can avoid certain situations, putting yourself in certain situations. You can eat better foods when there's brain foods you can eat.
Sure.
There's all types of things you can do. And I believe 99% to 100% of us players are walking around with the pre-assumption that we have CD. Okay? And now, what can we do about it? And to know for 100%, sure, we'd love to take a test. We'd love to. Why not? Who wouldn't want to know what's wrong with you, you know? But as a precaution, all of us are walking around thinking, well, I got it. And let me do some things to get myself better, you know, and try to cope better so that I can function and raise my kids and enjoy my life and enjoy my grandkids and on and on and on.
So wow.
That's not a sensitive topic at all. I think that's pretty clear cut, you know, and they've been saying that they have these ways to detect the CTE for a while now, but every test has come up kind of questionable, you know, by the medical science world. So I don't know what this test is you're referring to, but if it's out there, by all means, we would love to, you know, utilize it. And hopefully, you know, I'm a part of another study, brain study, that I've been doing for the last 5 years, volunteering to help them research this thing. So they still haven't come up with a cure, but all of us would love to be tested if we have it, and all of us would love they come up with a cure. I mean, that would be great. That would be great, you know?
Sure.
So hopefully that happens, you know, hopefully that happens. as soon as possible.
It came up in the last couple of days. I had your book. I've been taking it around. I've been showing it to some friends. I was at a family event the other day. I showed it to my cousin. First thing he said to me is, you know, I tend to think of him primarily from moonlighting, because I loved moonlighting so much. I said, I told him that in the interview 6 years ago. I asked him if anybody ever said that to him, and he said, not really. I mentioned that to one of our show contributors, Anthony Patrone, who said, funny thing is, I generally tend to think of him primarily from Better Off Dead, because that's one of my favorite movies ever. So it's a small sample size, Curtis, but you've actually got three people who primarily think of you as something other than Booger.
Right. Yeah, well, that's nice. I mean, the thing about it is, I don't have at all a problem with, you know, being associated with Booger, with Revenge of the Nerds. I mean, you know, I have always thought of it that the career that I've had over all these years, at least the film side of it, TV side of it, is basically built on four jobs, which were Risky Business, Revenge of the Nerds, Better Off Dead, and Moonlighting. And everything that happened in movies and television after 1983 or 4 had to do with those jobs. And it's hard for me to really resent a character like Booger. It's something that at the time I thought I would probably hate, because it was a character which was very far from who I was and how I thought I would want to be remembered. But since then, I've realized that, you know, it was a good, solid piece of work, and it really does mean something to people. And it's hard to be resentful, you know, toward a character like that.
There was a sense, perhaps for a lot of them, these are more somber times. These are serious times. Can't be wearing a Big Bird outfit to the awards show here. I am a serious person with serious things to say. So do you get the sense that there was any kind of sense of the moment that we're in as a country and as a society, perhaps dictating the fashion choices to some of these actresses, that, again, everybody wants to be taken very seriously if they have political commentary out there, and that might have kind of pervaded a little bit of a sense of what they might wear so as not to give somebody an invitation to dismiss them out of nowhere?
Well, I would wait until the MTV VMAs and the MTV Movie Awards before I make that judgment, because that's
okay.
Where you usually see the most outrageous outfit. And I'm saying that half jokingly and half seriously. I mean, Emmys, you don't really see people dressing as Big Bird to the Emmys, unless it's somebody.
Right.
And even then, I think, what was it, one of the music awards where Bjork came dressed as like a swan or
right.
A stork or something and had like the whole bird neck. I mean, I don't remember the Emmys. You can wear a bad dress, you can wear a loud dress. But I don't remember, you know, men coming dressed as Darth Vader and women coming dressed with Princess Leia hair. I mean, to be outrageous. Like you'll see a lot of times people coming in an egg, like Lady Gaga at one of the MTV Awards. I think when there's political unrest and there's political dissent, I think everybody tries to tie things to it and tries to tie people's reactions to it. I mean, a lot of the actors who are intelligent, when they speak and what they're wearing, I mean, their words ring true with what they're saying, and you respect them for their words. Another person who's maybe not as bright could dress up stunningly conservatively, but looking totally beautiful, but as soon as he or she opens their mouth, you realize what a fool they are. So I don't think it was a conscious effort to say, ooh, these are challenging political times. We have to be thought of as, you know, more serious. I mean, there was still glamour. There was still glitz. Some of the women look absolutely stunning. I mean, Jane Fonda came out with in the 9 to 5 tribute, and everyone was saying like an ageless wonder because she gets better, you know, each year. And with a hot pink dress and everything, I certainly wouldn't consider that, you know, serious or understated. You know, for a woman of any age to be in a bright hot pink dress, you know, with sort of Ariana Grande type hair. But the bottom line is, they dress and they present themselves in a way that's going to get them, or what they think is going to get them, the most attention. And even going back to the Ashley Graham comment that you made earlier, we're talking about it. Can you name who was the best dressed that year?
No.
Whatever she did right.
the whole trend of automation of jobs. And I have to tell you that just in my personal experience that I have seen in the last year with my own two eyes, that spreading into white-collar work, the likes of which I didn't think I'd see for a good ways into the future, but where it is now, much less what we're seeing with fast food places, what we've been seeing in manufacturing for some time now, et cetera, et cetera. So as you look down the scope of what's coming subsequently here, there are some futurists out there that have sounded a great warning about this and what it's going to mean when you have essentially a large chunk of the population that is essentially unemployable because there just aren't enough things to go around. Now, there are those who will tell you there will be new jobs created because of the robots, but where do you kind of come out on this, and how big of a bomb do you see that being that could explode subsequently here in the years to come as far as the devastation of the employable population?
Well, I think that's why we have President Trump now, because
yep.
There's a lot of people who have lost their jobs due to automation, due to jobs going overseas where wages are lower, as well as sort of the evolution of technology. I mean, GE once upon a time, and these are kind of round numbers, I may not be right, had like 250,000 employees and had a market cap of $250 billion, so that's sort of a billion for each employee. Well, like Facebook has and again round numbers, a market cap of probably like $400 billion and what, 30,000 employees, 35,000 employees. So you're getting this incredible value to employee ratio that is very different than it used to be. Like a lot of wealth is being created, but not with very many people. And what does Facebook manufacture? It doesn't manufacture anything. So all those people who are trained for manufacturing, they're probably feeling, understandably stymied in their life, and it's very frustrating. You can't get a job that's means something to you, that gives you meaningful work. And people talk about, oh, we'll just retrain them. Well, you're not going to retrain somebody who, worked on an assembly line making cars, and they're going to now code for Facebook. That's just not going to happen. So the question is, how do you grapple with that? And people talk about retraining all the time and providing money for retraining. But, frankly, I'm not sure I see how people can be retrained for sort of the jobs that are available in the new economy. And I don't, frankly, see that can be solved easily either. And I think that's going to continue to make people angry and frustrated, and why there will always be a lot of support for somebody like a Trump who claims to be an outsider and who's going to blow up the system, but of course is just the worst possible messenger for that whole idea. I think it's an incredibly important and valuable and worthwhile idea. I cannot understand why this country went for a guy like that, thinking that he was going to be the one who was going to be the right messenger of this message, a guy who lives on Fifth Avenue in a triplex apartment with, brown marble and flies around on a private jet. Why would a guy like that be the one who cares about people in the heartland? He says he does, and he says let's drain the swamp and let's blow it up, but he's been in office now 6 months. What has he done?
To the naked eye, I'm looking at this and going, I don't know if I've ever seen a week where a team takes a loss like New Orleans and potentially shoots up in the power rankings the way that they do, because with Drew Brees and that defense, they may not have a first-round bye, but to my naked eye, New Orleans might come out of the whole thing here smelling like a rose better than anybody.
Pick them before the season to make the NFC title game.
Wow.
They're pretty good about that right now. I'd expected some better play out of this defense. Couldn't have anticipated they'd be as good as they've been, and obviously mentioned Kamara before, obviously a huge win. Quickly, the fantasy thing related to Aaron Rodgers. Man, you can dust off Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson out of mothballs.
Yes.
At least for a moment or two, so that's good. So you've got that at value going through. But the NFC, a bit of a muddled mess, and I think it's going to be fun to watch to see how this separates out. Because Wentz had everybody flying, now Foles, it's been a while. It's kind of like the conversation not to get sidetracked by, you know, a Colin Kaepernick conversation, but when people say, look how good he was, I'm like, that's 5 years ago already.
Right.
That's a long time in NFL years. Doesn't mean that they can't put something together to keep things rolling, because there's certainly a lot of talent on this team, but you look at the way it breaks out. Rams are scoring points. Robert Woods will be back in theory this week. You've got Seattle and Atlanta and all these. They're all flawed. They'll have some big problem that goes with their teams right now. The Rams still gave up a bunch of points. As good as they've been in spots, they can still get after it. Seattle, you got that banged up secondary. The identity is lost. I don't know none of those guys got suspended for all that stupidity this past week.
Right.
But that's a whole other thing. The Vikings, still Case Keenum. When it's all said and done, are you trusting Case Keenum? I guess in this NFL season, you have to say, okay, I'm in. As long as Xavier Rhodes is still locking down a number one and getting after it that way, that they've been able to piece it together, because Thielen's a phenomenal talent. Diggs and Rudolph, I mean, you've got explosive playmakers that are in a backfield that's been better than I think most anticipated. But you go down the line, Carolina, they show up as quickly and then disappear as quickly as they came. And Atlanta defensively lapses. Julio Jones disappears at times. The only two guys I trust on a weekly basis are Mohamed Sanu and Freeman.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan's been consistent at best, and really a downturn markedly from where we were a year ago, talking about all his greatness. So, you know, you've got a race of teams. The Saints come out as the most complete, where you at least check every box saying, all right, I've got a number one receiver that can dominate a game. I've got a quarterback who's been there, who's led. I mean, we'll have no idea why you're throwing it to Josh Hill on a second down into triple coverage, but that's a whole other thing for another time, and why Sean Payton's running onto the field. See, all these little things that jump into play that you remember and you scratch your head over, but everybody's got their flaws. You know, even the AFC, you get back to that, and, you know, Pittsburgh giving up big play after big play. New England, the last couple of weeks, look uninspired offensively and defensively this week. Saw shades of the team we saw for the first month. So all of a sudden, you've got the Superchargers out here in Los Angeles in front of their 25,000 people, and you've got a playoffs that becomes pretty interesting, that, you know, hot team rolling in could find their way to Minnesota.
How do you see the role of, like, traditionalists in this? Like, I'm probably never gonna meet the modern evolved man all the way on a lot of stuff, but at a bare minimum, when we're talking about sexual assault, sexual harassment, whatever, sign me up. I'm there, and so are an awful lot of people on my side. So how do you think people from the opposite sides can make common cause?
Men like you should be the role model. The problem has been there are too many men who walk the walk, but don't talk the talk,
okay,
don't walk the walk, who position themselves as equal rights, or at least as being good men, what we would all describe as good men and good dads. We think of ourselves in many ways as you know, whether it's good dads, good men. We believe in equal rights in the workplace, but then we don't think twice about standing in a small group of men at an event and making misogynistic or sexist comments, or telling inappropriate jokes, or showing inappropriate pictures, or sharing them online. We don't think twice about some of the realities that have gone on in the workplace for decades, if not centuries, that have just been part of our culture. We and when we look at it now from the prism of the realities today, we see how offensive they are, and how offensive they've been, and how destructive they've been. Who don't think twice about taking, saying that the man's, the woman's place is in the household, and the man's place is out bringing in the bacon, so to speak. And, you know, the traditional values that are fine, but when they include any form of harassment, when they include any form of physical power or economic strength that doesn't allow their wives or their girl or the women in their lives to have the same rights as they do, regulatory laws that are biased in one way, these are all going down. The society is just not going to accept them anymore, and challenges we've got to separate the things you're saying in terms of what socially conservative and honest truths are. And I think every man and woman, but every man, has to ask ourselves, are we completely truthful in our relationships? Are we completely honest? If we get caught doing something inappropriately, do we lie? Is that our natural instinct? And if we can't answer those questions and say, you know, we stand on solid ground, then I think a lot of the values that we all talk about and that you correctly want to pass down to our children are not the values that are going to be accepted in the future. It's a different set of positive values. On the other hand, I applaud and commend and am 100% with you in terms of saying we need to protect, defend, and support those values when they conform to the new societal norms. And I believe that if you look back, you know, in any religion, in any credo, in any true human state of positive relationships, that the norms you apply are the ones that we want for the future. I just believe that a too large percentage of men, especially men in power, have abused those privileges that we've been given.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.